Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Nicholas Davenport, aka Mr. Mental Muscle, back with another episode of the Mental Muscle Podcast. Now, we have in studio Ms. Evelyn Rotella here today to talk about numerous things. She has a background in law enforcement, background in health and wellness, fitness, numerous things. I'm sure I'm leaving something out, but that's why we're here. We'll talk more about what you do, what you don't do, what you like to do, and how we can help other people in any demographic perform. So you can add any more to that, or we can just get into it.
We can just get into it.
All right. So we've had a few conversations before this time, and we talked about wellness in general. So let's start off with you. I know you're always putting in work every hour on hour. I can see you doing something gym related or nutrition related. And that's great because we need to promote more of that. You're a product of what you do. So how do you personally get yourself to be disciplined and keep going? Because obviously it's not easy, but you still find yourself doing it.
That's a great question because recently, I've taken a break from my own podcast.
I saw that.
But there was one episode and there was a post that I made on my Instagram once upon a time about, you know, a lot of the questions that I get are, how do you stay so motivated? How do you stay disciplined? And I really don't. At this point, it's just a habit. Mm-hmm. It really is a habit. And that's one thing that I teach my own clients, you know, when we're getting into their program and, you know, people hire a coach and they want immediate results. Who doesn't?
Yep.
But the one thing I get is always like, how long is this going to take? Well, that's up to you. What work are you willing to put in? What's your schedule like? How can we fit this into your lifestyle? Because that's truly what it's about. It's changing your lifestyle. It's not incorporating a 30, 60, or 90 day program. It's making tweaks and changes to what you do in your day-to-day life. It becomes a habit. So at this point, you know, it's not even about discipline, like getting up at 5 to go to the gym, whatever. It's a habit at this point.
How many times have you had people come to you say, I got a cruise in a month. I need to get beach ready or bikini ready. How many times did you get that?
Honestly, I haven't. I think one of the things that I do, I'm very transparent. As you see on my social media, I'm very upfront. We're not, you know, I'm not get this physique in 30 days or a week or whatever it is. It's going to take time. You need patience. You need consistency. Don't expect immediate results. You might see a huge change in 30 days just because, especially if you're going from somebody who's very sedentary and doesn't do anything to all of a sudden you're moving more, you're eating better. You're choosing better quality sources of food. You'll probably see a big difference in that first month because it's completely different from what you've ever done. Mm-hmm. But realistically, after that immediate change, things are going to slow down a little bit and it's just going to be a steady climb, you know?
Yeah, I see that a lot. People get those beginner gains because, like you said, they've done nothing at all for 20 years. So your body's adapting.
I could get newbie gains again.
I guess that's another topic. As the closer you get to your capacity, the harder it is to progress. But let's backtrack a little. What is your background as far as like performance? Did you play sports? Did you do anything as a child?
I grew up in a very non-health and fitness focused family.
That's most Americans these days.
Yes. And it's funny because my brother and I were both forced into physical activity, but that was more for busy work. Not because my parents wanted us to be an athlete or it was just to keep us out of trouble, keep us busy, keep us off the streets, you know, do your own thing.
Where did you grow up?
In Queens, New York.
Because I know your number was New York. I never asked exactly where. So Queens, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about New York, but I've heard enough rap music know that Queens from, what's the name, Nas, who else, 50 Cent, who else
Nicki
from
Minaj.
Queens? Nicki Minaj. So yeah. So I don't know. Personally, I've been there once, but yeah, I was in the good parts.
Well, I grew up in a very nice neighborhood in Queens.
Oh, okay.
But you know, everybody, especially once you branch off to high school and you're no longer in like the zone schools, there's different crowds you could run with. And I spent a lot of time in East New York, Brooklyn, which we won't get into that, but it's very different from where I grew up. And so the sports and everything, it was to keep us busy.
So you did do sports, but it just more so was, it wasn't
I wasn't good at any of it.
Okay, I was about to say you weren't trying to be an Olympian or something like that.
Not at all. And nutrition was never a thing. So both of my parents, they're Chinese American.
Okay.
They grew up in traditional Chinese households where, you know, everybody worked in their parents' restaurant and everybody raised the children type of deal. but it, you know, their parents grew up in poverty. So it was eat what you can and eat whenever you can eat. So I grew up with that mindset of you have to finish what's on your plate. There was no stop when you're full, stop when you're nourished. It was like, you're not leaving this table until every single piece of food is gone from your plate. And that to me, while I can understand, you know, the reason behind it, as far as nutrition and health goes, that's a horrible habit to develop. Because there were so many times growing up, I was very overweight growing up, fluctuated in weight. I went from overweight to severely underweight. You know, I went through a period of my life where I had hardcore eating disorders, like bad anorexia, bulimia.
Wow.
And then once like fitness became part of it, you know, there were disorders, disordered eating and habits that I acquired without even realizing it, where, you know, just because I wasn't starving myself or binging and purging my food, I would eat in excess, feel bad, and then try to offset the calories by like going to the gym and like burning it off, which is just as unhealthy. So this habit of you can't leave the table until everything's off your plate, horrible, because you'd go out to eat.
Yeah.
And you eat and you're like, you know, especially when you're with friends too and you're having fun, you're like, oh my God, I'm so full. Meanwhile, like, oh, can I take this? Are you done? Would you like a box? Like, no, I'm still picking at it. Like, why? Why are you doing that?
It goes to the behavior part of it.
Yes.
And it's funny that you say that because obviously I met you at this point in life.
Yes.
And it just shows you, you never know someone's background, because it's like they'll assume maybe, oh, she's always been fit and she has it easy, not knowing your background. Not saying I assumed you had it easy, but I've had that happen to me even where...
I get that all the time. Oh, you're so, you know, to stereotype too, like, oh, you're so easy. Asians don't gain weight. Like, what are you talking about? My dad is very overweight. I have obese family members, you know, like, so, and not that, we won't get into this, but I'm not genetic, like biologically, that's not my family. I'm adopted.
Oh, okay.
But even if that was my biological family, you know, like, it's not tonight. I'm not lucky. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of stuff that goes into maintaining my current physique.
No, stereotypes exist. Trust me. I won't go too deep into it either, but it's just like people assume if you're black, you're athletic automatically, or you can jump high. And now I actually was a former athlete and I was a top ranked in Florida, but that's just coincidence. So it's like these unneeded pressures that can go into the body image or dysmorphia or eating disorders when it's assumed that you're supposed to be skinny. There's no obese Asians or unathletic black people, whatever it may, the stereotype might be. And going back to fitness, we live in a world where a country that's 60 to 70% overweight. So it's like, there's so much going
into
this.
Pretty sure it's higher now at this point.
Probably. I don't know. The last time I checked was a decade ago, it was definitely 60%.
Yeah.
And but even so, 60% is high. That's half the country.
Yeah, it's more
than half the country. So, and if you notice like kids, right? You probably see it on like social media. I see people who post their kids and it's like, obviously there was big kids when we were growing up, but it seems like it's more and more because the food was bad when we were growing up, but it was like, we were at least outside playing.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that too. And it's like, we were outside playing, but now it's iPads. There's sit in front of the TV to raise them. And I'm not getting into parenting skills, but that plays a factor in that obesity, because people always say it runs in the family. Like, no, like obviously there is predispositions, but that's not, if you put a percent on that, that's probably like 20% maybe.
Right.
What's the other 80? That's your lifestyle habits and your behavior. So,
absolutely.
But yeah. So, and another note, so going to maybe the law enforcement side, we can get into things like how, because I've seen it firsthand for the last 5 years of wellness in that population. And I've learned some new statistics that about 60 to 65 years old is the average life expectancy after finishing a career in like law enforcement or first responder in general. And what do you think goes into that? Because obviously the statistics show like heart disease plays a factor, but being in that field and someone who is in the healthier side, What do you think could be not necessarily done about it, but what's going on? Because there's a lot of factors, I'm sure.
There's a lot. So we're going to, I mean, it this is speculation. I don't know.
Of course, we're just talking.
I don't do my research. I'm not like a data analyst or anything. Nah, but from what I've seen and the things that I've heard about and just observed being in the field, not only do you have like the physical health decline, but then mental health too, and then the coping mechanisms. So in first response period, not even just law enforcement, I'm talking about fire rescue, you know, even communications like dispatching. Mm-hmm. Even so, I have some friends that are trauma nurses also that deal with things the same way. Yeah. Alcohol is a very popular way to cope with your feelings. And I mean, you just, there's literally not one benefit to drinking alcohol. Not one. Yeah. Not one. Everything is a negative. And that's not to say, like, I definitely enjoy a drink here and there, you know, socially, whatever, but that is not my way of dealing with the feelings that can creep into your life doing this job. And it's funny because personally, and knock on wood, I've never had to deal with anything in my profession that would be what somebody would consider a legitimate reason to have any form of PTSD or traumatic response to stuff. You know, I've never been, knock on wood, actively shot at. Nobody's tried to kill me that I'm aware of. And I know people that have been on that side. So I can only imagine the feelings that come into it. But I do know from my experience being on patrol, seeing some of the things that I've seen, and things that I would have never expected to affect me the way that they did. Like if you told me on paper, hey, you're going to go to a call about X, Y, and Z, I'd be like, I'll be fine. Those are the calls that really like stuck with me. And then just a lot of the external things that come along with it. So not just responding to the calls for service and dealing with people per se. There was one time a few years ago, I'm not going to get into it. It can get very political, but there were things happening in current events that caused a lot of civil unrest. And I made an episode about that too on my podcast, Health for First Responders. That was the episode. So I talked about it in detail. There's a lot of stuff going on that caused me to have a heightened sense of anxiety and hypervigilance and constantly looking over my shoulder because people were targeting law enforcement officers. Yep. They were throwing Molotov cocktails at their houses. You know, just, it was a lot of stuff going on. So I got to a point where I was just never, never relaxed, ever. It was constant fight or flight, yep, times 100, like more than I could have ever imagined. And I would never think, like, if you told me, hey, this is going to happen and whatever, nothing's actually going to happen to you, but you're going to feel these things, I'd be like, you're lying. And it affected me so badly. I stopped taking care of myself. I stopped working out. I was drinking heavily. Just not dealing with things in a way that I have ever dealt with any kind of intense emotion before. And it really caused a lot of problems, not only in my physical health, my mental health, my personal relationships, my self relationship. It can get to be a lot. So I think, going back to your original question, that's a lot of the stuff that people in this profession can deal with. And not everybody has that level of self-awareness to stop and assess and be like, am I allowed to curse?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on here?
Hey, you can speak your mind.
And they can all snowball too. So, right. So now you have a decreased sense of mental health, like wellness, you're drinking more. So then you're going to feel like shit the next day, or you might eat like shit. And then because you eat like shit and you feel like shit, you're not going to go to the gym because you're like, ugh, I'm just going to rest. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a vicious cycle and it repeats itself. And then that's how I feel you end up with a lot of overweight, disgruntled, unhappy cops, not even just cops. I know a lot of firefighters that end up this way too. And I think that is the reason for that shorten life expectancy in first responder world.
It makes a lot of sense because you talked about being hypervigilant. And obviously from my side of things with the mental side, fight or flight is meant to help us get out of a situation. That's literally what it's not a bad thing. But like you said, you were always in it. So you got things like cortisol breaking you down.
Adrenaline.
So your body's running on all cylinders and it's just like a car. You can't floor it nonstop. Eventually you're going to wear and tear. Mm-hmm. And like you said, if you do that for, I don't know how long that went on before you kind of got back to where you were, but let's imagine you do that for 15, 20 year career. That adds up.
I can tell you it was a good 8 months, 10 months. So less than a year. And it affected me greatly. So I honestly can't even imagine somebody going through that and never getting the help, because I was in a situation where I was forced to go seek professional help with my personal relationships, you know, making me go and do that to just improve myself, you know. And it was not a comfortable thing. I think we're the same age. You're born in 89?
88.
Okay, so I'm born in 89. Our generation, even still, even though, oh, millennials, whatever, mental health awareness was not like an accepted thing. Yeah. Like if you spoke to somebody, if you went to therapy, you were crazy. Mm-hmm. So imagine the people that are born in the 70s, the 60s, the 50s,
like crying.
Even more. So, yeah, exactly. You don't even bring that up. You're like, what? No, drink it off. Be a man, like grow some hair on your chest and suck it up. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was a hard pill to swallow, but I went and did it because it had to be done. It had to be done. And I'm glad that I did it. And it, with anything else, something's uncomfortable in the beginning. You're not used to it. It's awkward. You feel funny, but the more you do it, repetitions, it becomes habit. It becomes normal. It's like your new normal. So while I went from like weekly sessions to monthly to now like maybe every quarter, you know, whatever, I still keep up with it because it has definitely helped me in so many ways. Not even in just my own relationship with myself, but in all of my personal relationships.
Now that's, I like how you said it went from weekly to monthly to quarterly. And that's something because I was in the clinical field first before I switched to more what I do now and the more practical psychology stuff. But that's something I'm big on. It shouldn't be a lifelong thing of I seen my therapist every week for the last 15 years since I was like 19. Like, it's not saying it's good or bad, but it's like fitness, right?
Yeah.
Eventually you get to the point where maybe you don't need to train with a trainer 4 sessions a week, maybe once a week, because now you got
the tools.
Exactly. You got the tools, you got the baseline. But with mental health, it's the same thing, because I've heard so many people, and it's not a knock to them, but they will brag and saying, oh, I'm in therapy, which is cool. And obviously I come from that field, but it's like the fact that you're still at like a crutch almost, like eventually you got to take the training wheels off, because if you need that therapist every second of every day, are you really progressing? And it's parallels with the fitness thing. Like, are you really progressing if you can't do a single workout unless there's someone standing right next to you? So I think more people need to hear that message of it should be an end goal. Like, not saying you stop having issues, you stop needing help, but if it's always, let me call them. How do you truly get that resilience or that strength? And that's part of your name, Rugged Resilience. Yeah. So that's a good message. And I think going back to what you said about self-awareness too, from my experience, like my father is in law, or he's retired now, but is a police for 32 years. So I've seen it from that angle. And it's like, not people don't know that they're doing, like they know they're stressed. Like, it's not they're oblivious, but they're not aware where it's coming from or how much it's truly affecting them.
So I'm curious, because I'm the first in my family to do this job. So growing up as the son of a police officer, did you ever, in that time, were you aware of it? Or can you say now, looking in hindsight, were there times that you were the target of his stress?
So that's funny you say that, because I actually do bring this up every now and then. And I could see, not necessarily the target, because I had 2 other brothers. And personally, I was the middle child. So I think just being a middle child made me a target. But
you were forgotten about.
But I could, exactly. But I could tell now in hindsight that there was times it did come home. And he would, I forget what years he worked overnight, because eventually he became a sergeant and it got a little lesser. But it's like, you can tell the difference in when there's a harder day, easier day. But I couldn't tell it then as an 8, 9, 10-year-old. But definitely in hindsight, now that I know what I know, definitely. And I guess that's a testament from the other side of the spectrum of someone like you experiencing it, then being the child of it. And I know that's another narrative that goes in this industry, because I've talked to a few officers about how their relationships with their immediate family, wives, children, can be hindered, because while you're doing a job that I would say I guess now maybe not as much, but I would say 60% of Americans maybe would see as a upstanding job. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe like you said, a few years ago, that wasn't the case, yeah. but definitely I say a decent amount of Americans still see it as an upstanding yeah. job being a police. But it's like, at the same time, you get resented because what comes with it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's inevitable. You can't avoid some of the stressors. And I think it's a, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, from your side, both sides need to have an understanding. It can't just Absolutely. Be the family. Like, you just got to understand he's going through a lot at work. True. But at the same time, they can't just be like, I negate or neglect what's going on at home.
Right. No, you can't. You have to be very aware of your personal relationships and how your actions and your behaviors are affecting those around you. With any profession, not just law mm-hmm. enforcement, yeah. but especially in the first responder world, because of the high level of just like, just not sugarcoating it, just the shit that we see, mm-hmm. you know, and people take it home with them, whether they are aware of it or not. So I'm curious though, how, like now in hindsight, if you don't mind sharing, what were some of the behaviors that you think where your dad, like, kind of taking homework with him?
I would think, because his personality is similar to mine, and I guess I get it from him, but it was more like passiveness. It wasn't necessarily like an outward, like, what you doing? Get out of my okay. face. It was more so like, you could tell, like, he was ready to be done, do his thing, and not neglectful, and but not just being, like connected. I'm in my little zone.
Gotcha.
We're like, you know, I was, like I said, I was a middle child, so I wasn't like that. Daddy. Like, that might have been my little brother, and my siblings are spaced out. I'm 6 years younger than my older and 5 years older than my okay. younger. So it's like, we always in different points. So I can never say that we're in the same dynamic, but I just feel like I can see there was times where it was more passive. So it was never like that, because I know there's all types of ways this could manifest. Right. And I know some people might have been more the, like, say, if you bring in like alcohol and stuff, that might turn into rage or something. Like, yeah. so I was fortunate that it never got to that point or nothing even close to that. Right. But I can say there was times like, just leave me alone, let me do my thing. And I guess since I was hands off, I definitely didn't bother him. But, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. No, I only ask because, you know, I don't have kids. And I don't want them. That's my personal choice. But
hey.
I have friends, you know, that I work with. Whether it's with my agency or another agency that have kids, and the kids can be, you know, babies to teenagers, and we will have these conversations every now and again where, you know, they're the ones that come to me and like, dude, I'm such an asshole. I'm like, why? What happened? Like, I just yelled at my kid. I didn't deserve it. I'm mm-hmm. like, what happened? Like, it's just a long fucking day. You know, I got held over 4 hours. I was tired. I hadn't eaten. So even things like that, you know, where it's not necessarily that they went through something super traumatic, but mm-hmm. it was a busy day. It was hot as shit outside. They hadn't gotten a chance to eat since mm-hmm. 10 a.m. And now it's 7 p.m. And like, you know, the minute you walk in the door, you can't even take your boots off. And it's like, daddy, mm-hmm. mommy, mommy. So I can only imagine the overwhelming feelings that come along with that, where me, I get to come home and it's my dog and I'm like, hey buddy.
Yeah, definitely different. It makes me think of something like, are you familiar like concussions and how the new theories is more so like it's not the big hits like say football. People thought, oh, you get this big old hit, but it was more like the tiny little hits, like getting tackled and falling to the ground every other play, and that adds up. Mm-hmm. So going to my point, like you said, it doesn't have to be, oh, I was in a shootout today. Versus like, no, it's just the little things every day add up. Yeah. Those micro, like going back to fitness, those micro tears is what adds up to the,
yes.
the breakdown of the muscle and it gets stronger. But it's like, it's constant. You're always getting the micro little hits or tears, whatever, in the day to day. And that's what adds up, because people always think it's sensational, but that's not every day. Yeah. Like, I don't know the stats either on that, but I would, correct me if I'm wrong, that's a minority of day to day on the job, right? It's not every day you're in the, like, movies would make it look otherwise.
Knock on wood. Yeah, no. If you watch, like, The Rookie, LAPD, they're in a shootout every
day.
Every hour.
Right. Yeah, every hour. Like, you would think that it was a wild, wild west.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so I think just, like, that's the add up of every little thing. And we're human. Like, that's something my dad told me, too, especially during that time period you were talking about, because I know exactly what time period that mm-hmm. was. And I think we talked about it a few days
ago. We talked about it off the record.
Yeah, so he told me, like, what before that person put on a badge or whatever, that's who they were. So if you're already someone who can't deal with stress, all that, that's already pre-existing and then adding on to the job. So it comes down to the person at the end of the day. The job is just what you do. I tell that to my athletes I work with. You're an athlete what you do, not who you are. Yeah. And that's a big difference. I think going to the law enforcement, it's the same thing. It's not who you are.
Correct.
People got to separate that.
I just think just jobs in general. So when I hop on like a consultative call with a prospective client, one of the things I touch upon, because when people hear the word health, they think physical fitness, mm-hmm. right? I know I do. When I hear like, oh, they're healthy, I'm like, oh, so they're in shape. Like, what? It's not always about that. How's your mental health? How's your relationships? Like, how's your financial health?
Oh, yeah.
How's your occupational health? So one of the questions that I'll ask people is like, you know, what do you do for a living? And some people are like, why do you want to know? I'm like, oh, I'm just curious. Because depending on what you do and what your responsibilities are is going to affect the amount of stress that you feel on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis. And as you know, all of these things are just like, you know, linked to one another as far as hormones go and stress level and a lot of things, like everything affects, it's the domino effect. Mm-hmm. So occupational health, are you happy with what you do? And even if you're happy with what you do for work, so let's say law enforcement, right? Okay, you're a cop, you love what you do. Are you happy in your unit? Like, where are you assigned right now? Are you happy with the people that you work with? Because if you're not, you're going to take that home with you. You're going to hate going to work every day. You're going to just like being at work is just going to bring out just, it's going to put you in a heightened sense of like anxiety and just mm-hmm. I think that's very important to truly love what you do.
I've seen that firsthand too, now that being in the position I'm in, and like I said, not even just in law enforcement, because a lot of people, like you said, you say, why would I need to know that? They're not aware that obviously if you're going somewhere 8 hours a day, sometimes longer.
12 hour shifts?
Yeah.
At my agency.
Yeah, if it's at an agency, but let's like say even outside of law enforcement, let's say they're a chef or something. Yep. And it's like, say, 8 hours spent there. Do you like the people? Do you like the job? Do you like the flow of the restaurant? And it's like most people, I said, I'm fortunate enough that I love what I do and I'm very fortunate. It took a lot of work, but most people don't say that. I know for a fact, if I was to put a percent from what I hear on social media, because you know, people love to take a better job on social media. I have people, I used to be a teacher actually at Broward County School Board, and I see some people who are like, I can't wait to get out of this job. And I can't wait till summer. And if you say you get a client that's a teacher mm-hmm. and they're saying stuff like 5 days of summer, I can't wait to be free.
Yeah.
More than likely, they're not happy at their job.
Right.
And it's like going to the day to day. Are you going to work out after you had a long, stressful day with dealing with kids that you may not enjoy as much? Mm-hmm. Probably not. You're probably just going to get home, watch TV, eat some, probably not the best. So I think that's very relevant that you brought it up, because a lot of people don't think of financial and occupational leads in the financial, because the type of job going to dictate how much money you make.
Exactly.
And what's the myth? I've heard this a lot. Maybe you heard a lot. The biggest excuse, eating healthy is so expensive. Is it though?
Not these days.
So that's what
fast food is like no longer, you know, $3 for a burger and fries.
It's like $12 for a small meal.
Yeah. And when you divide the cost per serving, chicken breast and rice is cheaper than what you're getting at McDonald's.
I think they see it because it's quick versus it's cheap. Because chicken breast and rice, if it's pound for pound cheaper, but you gotta cook it. You gotta season, you gotta do all these other steps, which is not that long when you really think about it.
It's really not.
Like, we both obviously being in the health and fitness industry see it, but the average person assumes that, oh, I could just go and drive. But when you think about it, if you have a long line at a Chick-fil-A or Wendy's or whatever, you add that up, you say 2 to 3 times a week, that's like 45 minutes to an hour of time that you could have just cooked up some food for maybe 2-3 days in the same amount of time. But people don't look at it. I think going back to that perspective, the mental side, that's why I love bringing on the mental side before the physical, because cliche, the body only can do what the mind prepares it for, right?
Right.
So yeah, so that's pretty insightful. What about, you mentioned social wellness. So I'm personally, social media might not believe this, but I'm a pretty introverted person.
That's funny you say that. I just saw a meme the other day. It's like when my real friends see my social media and they know that I'm two different people.
Exactly. So going into that point, what is social wellness? Because a lot of people, and going back to our generation, I see this is very common where people be like, I don't have any friends, but they're always posting 20, 30 people. And it's like, they're not real relationships. So social wellness is something, I forgot, it was a study they did recently, and they broke down the things for like a quote unquote happy life, whatever that means for every person. But one of them was social wellness, saying, what are your relationships like? that is a big factor to your overall physical and mental health, because you're usually like who you hang around. Because if you're trying to be healthy, let's say you just get into fitness, but every weekend your friends want to go out and they're drinking and they're not supporting your goals, guess what? You're probably going to relapse and start going back to drinking and eating crazy.
So yeah, that to me, and I only say this because I've personally experienced this, my opinion is that boils down to you, because I go out with my friends all the time and I have always been the kind of person, you're not going to persuade me to do something I don't want to do. I go out with my friends. Oh, let's get shots. I don't do shots. No, I'll get you a shot. I don't do shots. I bought you a shot. Well, someone else is going to drink it. I'm not taking it. You're never going to tell me to do something I don't want to do. So anytime I have gone out with friends, if I want to drink, I'll drink. If I don't want to drink, I'm not drinking today. You're not going to have a drink. Oh, Evelyn's getting the grilled chicken and rice. We're here at a burger spot. And you're getting grilled chicken and rice. Yep. Because I plan my macros around today. this was last minute. I didn't plan my macros around today. If I had the time to, yeah, I plan my macros around having a burger and fries. Friday night I went out and that was a rare occasion for me where I didn't track anything. I'm just like, I haven't gone out in a while. I'm just going to do whatever I feel like doing today, knowing this is going to slow down my goal that I have, but not by a whole lot. It's just going to set me back a day and then continue on as if nothing else happened. And that's the thing, is the people that allow these influences in their life to dictate the decisions they make. And, you know, if they have a goal in mind, you're going to eat that. And then they feel awkward. A lot of people don't have that confidence or that just like assertiveness to say like, yeah, this is what I'm eating. Are you paying for me? You know, so they'll feel pressure, be like, oh, I want to fit in. I want to please people. Yeah. Like, oh, okay, fine. You're not going to get ice cream. We're all getting ice cream. Okay, I'll get ice cream. Like, no, I'm cutting right now. I want to be a certain body fat percentage by X amount of time. Yeah, I'm not having ice cream today. Maybe another time, you know, but I'm okay with that. So it boils down to the individual and just having the understanding. Also, just the acceptance. Like for me, Friday night, all right, I'm going to have whatever I want. I'm not going to like track any of it. But I know instead of maybe reaching my goal by June 30th, it might be July 4th.
But I have adjustable goals. That's the name of the game. If you're too rigid in your goals, you're going to set yourself up for failure. There's always going to be something. There's no perfect scenario. But isn't it interesting, though, on that note, that people shame, I don't know, is shame the word? Maybe I'll go with shame. Or fault you for trying to be healthy, as if it's taboo to be like, you're, like you said, you're eating chicken breasts and rice. It's like, why does it matter? But it's interesting, right? Like, or weird to me, at least.
Now, I'm not you're the psych major. I'm not a psych major. I took psych classes in college, but that was it. I was a major. That to me is because they have a goal that they don't have the consistency and discipline in themselves to do it, where they'd rather, instead of doing something that's going to make them uncomfortable and do something that's going to be different and hard, they're just going to, it's easier for them to be like, oh no, this is just who I am. I'm just going to eat the burger and fries. And then I'll just make that person feel bad for wanting to do better. It's
a coping mechanism.
Yeah, it is.
I get it. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You don't got to be a psych major. That was actually what I think too.
Staying in your comfort zone. It's what you know. You know, so a lot, and that's why in the health and fitness industry, you'll see a lot of people. That's why all the New Year's resolution people, it's like a running joke. It only lasts for the month of January.
New Year,
and then that's
new
it.
Me.
Because it's so uncomfortable and different and challenging that instead of just pushing through it long enough to the point where it just becomes a lifestyle change and it becomes your new normal, people get discouraged and it's too hard, or they're not seeing, everyone wants instant gratification.
Yep.
People, and that's the one thing, when I take on a new client, I explain to them exactly what I said earlier. Hey, you may see some drastic results in the beginning because this is going to be completely different from what you're doing, but anticipate that at some point, those results, like seeing them, that's going to slow down. And it's going to take consistency and continuing to show up and doing all of the things in this order, in this manner, for you to continue seeing results. And a lot of people don't want to do that. Everyone wants to see those results in the first week or two. And for me, I tell people not to anticipate seeing results until the third or fourth month.
I think that's reasonable. I think people also have a skewed perception of what's good progress, because I've had people who were sedentary and they lost like say 12 pounds in about 4 to 6 weeks, which is great. That's about 2 pounds a week. That's mm-hmm. actually optimal. So you don't lose too much muscle, but they'll get mad and be like, that's it. I'm like, you lost
a lot.
And it's fat. So it's like, you didn't lose muscle. You retained the muscle and lost fat, meaning you lost only what mattered to lose. But since it wasn't their goal, like they say they want to lose 40 pounds. They want that month one. I think shows like The Biggest Loser and all mm-hmm. that skew people's mindset because those people were morbidly obese when they're like 500
and
pounds.
It's a TV show. You're condensing everything into a 45-minute episode. You're mm-hmm. not showing.
I think it's like a year worth of progress when they do that.
Exactly.
But it's a 45-minute show.
Exactly. So you're not seeing the work that like truly goes into it. And
they don't do it healthy either. They binge or not binge. They overexercise and undereat. So, yeah. And they never keep, I think there was a study that did show the percentage. I want to say it was like over 50% of them gained it back right after the show ended.
Yeah, because they're not lifestyle, they're not habit changes. It's just like a temporary, it's a program. It's a mm-hmm. quick fix. It's this diet, the carnivore diet, the keto diet, this, the that. If you think of things at like a time, oh, well, I only have to do that for the next 100 days. Like, why are you limiting yourself on the time? Like, this should be a forever change. This is a forever change. And so it's funny because my current client, without putting their business out there, when I was going through just like our initial phone call to see, because I have an application process because I can only take on one person at a time. Mm-hmm. I want to take on somebody that is serious, that I know they are ready. Like they have hit the point in their life where like they need this to happen. It's not just a want, like it needs to happen. Because while I'm still... I price myself to be under the industry standard, it's still a significant amount of money you're paying up front, especially if you're doing like a 3-month enrollment up front. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money. So I want to make sure that, because if I just wanted the money, I would take on whoever and not care if you stuck to it or not. But I truly want to help people. Like if I can only work with one person at a time, like I want you to actually like do well.
Of course. Quality.
And it's my name attached to it too. And I'm very big on my reputation. Like you're going to pay me this money, but I'm going to get you the results that you want and you're going to be able to sustain them and you can use all of these tools in the future. My goal is not to have you pay me for the rest of your life. I think at most I would want you to sign up for even a year is pushing it. Like I don't want to take on somebody for more than 6 months, like, or 12, you know, at 12 months, a year. You should know how to do all this on your own now. So historically, the people I've taken on have signed on for like three months, which is the minimum I can recommend, but I do month to month. But 3 months, and then after that, they're on their own. They're like, I think I got this. If I need your help. And I always tell them, I was like, my door is always open. You can come back to me if you have questions. Like, I'm not going to charge you. Like, ask me the mm-hmm. questions. I'll help you. So this person went through something very traumatic. They were very stressed out, and because of the level of stress, and I believe at the same time, they said they were seeing a nutritionist, which I don't know who they are, don't want to knock them, but the advice that they said they were getting, I was like, okay, scratch your head. Not everybody's good at what they do, you know.
A lot of times those nutritionists get like a weekend certification. A dietitian, you have to go through like a degree program, but I think a nutritionist just need a quick cert. That...
Well, like the breakfast they were recommending was like a peanut butter jelly sandwich.
So sugar like and fat.
Yeah, like absolutely no lean protein, no complex carbohydrates. Like, so I was nice. Okay. So they said they dropped like 40 pounds, which I'm like, yeah, because you were eating maybe 900 calories a day, which is insane. I have them eating over 2,000 calories a day, and they've gone from, I think when they started with me on May 1st, they weighed in at 218 or 219, 220-ish. And right now, without restricting from anything, like this person has had pizza, they've had wings, mm-hmm. they eat carbohydrates on a regular. Granted, I've gotten them to make the decision, like you can eat whatever you want as long as you're tracking, you're hitting your macro targets, like we're gonna be on the right track. At some point I do wish for you to choose better quality sources of food, but that's on you. And again, we want this to be a sustainable thing. We want it to be enjoyable. So I don't want you like hating what you're eating.
Exactly.
But they have increased you know, the quality of food. Like they're choosing better sources. And they have consistently eaten anywhere from 2000 to even 2400 calories a day, 2500 calories, because there are days that aren't perfect. They go a little bit over, you know, what we intend to aim for. And they are currently sitting at 208.
Okay. Yeah. Progress.
In less than a month.
That's definitely good progress. Yeah. So I think that's good. You said that too, is the flexible eating, like the wings or a burger, whatever it is. I agree with that, because food wasn't meant to be like that. Going back to what you mentioned earlier, that it shouldn't be a love hate relationship. It's sustenance. So at minimum, eat to just be full and get healthy intake, whatever that is, 2,500, 2,000, 1,800. But also you shouldn't resent food either. Like, Oh, I can't eat that burger because I'm not supposed to. While I guess obviously there's better sources of food, but burger is just a word. Where did that burger come from? Because there's a McDonald's burger. I don't want to keep plugging free plugs for these chains. And there's like a, have you heard of Charm City?
You have burgers that are, the people actually take cuts of meat and grind them into ground meat. And it's a better, like there's no preservatives. There's no added, like anything like that.
And there's cardboard.
But it's funny because, you know, you meet the people that are like super extreme. They're like, food is fuel, which, yes, I agree. The basic concept, yes, food is fuel. However, I'm all about enjoying life. Exactly. You know, tomorrow's never guaranteed. An hour from now is not even guaranteed. 5 minutes from now is not guaranteed. By a nuclear bomb right now. And this whole recording is toast.
Draft but, coming.
Exactly. Before I came here, I just went to like a taco place. Like what? Like you should be able to enjoy these things, but also knowing who you are as a person, is this going to be something that you're able to, based on your experiences and your relationship with food and the things that you've gone through in your life, are you able to just have this one thing and not have it snowball into, and a lot of people can't. And personally speaking, with my history with eating disorders, there was a long period of my life where there's no way I could go out and have a slice of pizza without it leading to another slice of pizza, to chocolate, to a burger, and then going home and then like closet eating and like telling my friends that were expecting me to come out to dinner. I'm like, oh no, I'm feeling sick. Like I don't want to, just to eat everything in my house and then feel bad about it, you know, like, but now I've gotten to a point where I understand, like, if I want something, and this is why I say, don't tell yourself you can't have something. You can have it in moderation, and not, oh, I'm not allowed to do that. No, you're allowed to, I get to do this. I don't have to do it. I get to do this. So yeah. Okay. The other night I went out, didn't track a thing, because you know what? I get to come out with my friends and enjoy the company I'm with, and not have to worry about, am I eating 165 grams of protein today? Am I hitting 150 grams of carbs? Got a scale
on the table.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why? For what? You know, it's one day. And not even just one day. It's the one meal. Like, I don't believe in cheat weekends or cheat days. But yeah, they
undo the whole week because the calories you didn't eat are coming in that one day or weekend, even more so.
Exactly.
So when I hear people say that,
especially when it comes to food psychology, when you're in this constant state of restriction, I can't have this. Oh, the weekend's here. I can have it. And then you go all out. It's like, what are you doing? Why? Mm-hmm. Why? So no, go out, enjoy yourself. Understand your progress is going to be affected. Now, if there's like a reason for your restriction or, that's what it is. Really, it's a restriction. You're a bodybuilder. You're entering a competition. Yes.
Yeah.
There's a reason. You need to be on a timeline. There's a reason why you're doing it. But if you're somebody like me, where you work out for the benefits and the aesthetics and you want a certain physique, whatever, I'm in no rush. I don't need to be a certain body fat percentage by a certain date. Mm-hmm. I would like to be, but it's not, my livelihood doesn't depend on it.
Exactly.
So the one day is not going to kill me. The one meal is not going to kill me. A lot of people can't comprehend that this is not just, I don't know, you can't have something. This is bad. I hate when people say, like, oh, is it bad to have this? Mm-hmm. Anything could be good.
Bread
or
is bad.
Oh, I eat pasta every day.
Bad.
I eat rice. I eat pasta regularly. I eat bread daily. every day I have avocado toast on bread. Like, it's not inherently bad. Are there certain brands, like, you know, there's a difference between like big name brands of bread that have all this extra stuff because they want you to become like physically addicted to it and continuing to buy the product.
And they want it to last longer, so they make lower quality.
Yes, too, exactly. So. And there's all this added shit. Or you can go to like the local bakery, support a small business, and buy their bread that they made in house that doesn't have all this extra shit in it.
That's why I think they use these blanket terms, because like we mentioned earlier, to hear burger, to hear pizza, to hear bread, but it's like saying car. Not every car is a Honda. Right. Not every car is a Ferrari. But if you say car, you got to break down what type
of
car.
Even the fuel you're putting in the car is not the same.
Exactly. So
you get better performance with a higher quality source of fuel.
Exactly. So yeah. I think people stop looking at it as a blanket term. And I want to play the old sold card, because we're not that old, but it's like it's getting to a point where social media is influencing a lot of this too, because you get an influencer who got 8 million followers and they have, regardless if they got it by natural or not natural, they have a decent physique, their word is gold. So if they make a viral post with 8 million views that says, if you want to lose weight like me, don't eat this, this, and this. And everyone's like, oh my God, such and such said it. So it's the gospel. Versus someone who knows what they're talking about, who is maybe not as aesthetic or not as much followers or both. Because I know people who aren't as jacked or ripped, but they're in decent shape. But since they're not, their words go like one ear out the other, versus the big names who they look a certain way. They're like, they must be speaking. And people, they get envious of their physique. So logically, I get it.
Yeah.
He or she looks like that. I want to look like that. I'm doing what they do. Not understanding. Most of those people don't understand outside of their own body. They can teach you how they got there, but right. they couldn't tell you how to get there, which right. is a whole different thing. Yeah,
everybody's different. There's truly not like a one size fits all approach to when it comes to the physical sense of health and fitness to achieving your goal. But it's funny, you just said that you made me think of another meme. Like, I don't know about you, because we both have a pretty decent social media following, but prior to me starting my business, I was not on social media. I hate social media because of things like that. Because of people like constantly showing you things that look like reality and they're not. So with my social media, I try to be so transparent. People don't take a liking to that.
No, I'm right there with you. I don't know if you saw a video I made the other day.
Yeah.
I called out everyone in the mental performance issue of things I didn't like. And I lost followers because I used to make music back in the day. I played several instruments. My brother's a music producer. I know you get guitar, bass.
Both.
Okay. So strings, piano.
Yep.
So you understand, like, I'm a musician. I love making music, whether it be rapping, making beats, playing instruments. I have a trombone up in my storage unit.
Yeah.
But it's like, I made that because same reason, like, I'm transparent. Like, this is how I do it.
Yeah.
It's not always from the middle side, it's not always sunshine and rainbow. And I see a lot of people, you got to be positive. And even when things are going your way, like, no, sometimes you got to embrace that negative side and say, what's going on to get me here?
Absolutely.
Same thing with the fitness. Like, what's going on? Why I'm out of shape? What's going on? Why I binge eat? Like, sometimes there's something you're doing wrong. We can't just sugarcoat that. And that's why they got away, because it's too much sugar in the first place. No, I'm playing. But see what I did there. But yeah, so I'm with you with the social media. I'm one of those people
But even when it comes down to like your music preferences, like, yeah, I could use all the trending audio and get more likes and stuff, but I'm a metalhead. I put metal on my
that's
posts.
Never usually trending.
And never trending.
But you like
it. There's a small niche of people that it reaches out to where like they're like, oh yeah, rock on, like, cool. But I noticed a lot of times, like when I post like my hardcore stuff, like the real screamy stuff, I look at my following and it's like 5 people on follow me. I'm like, oh, well, but I don't care, because I'm never going to not be true to myself. Like, the whole reason why I came back on was for my business to continue helping people, because I can't work with more than one person at a time without my quality of service suffering. So if I can offer free educational content through social media, through my podcast, you know, I'd like to do that. Now it's kind of gotten to the point where I've noticed that it's just the reach that I was looking for and hoping for when I started all this is not where I wanted it to be. So now it's become a little bit more of like a personal page and just my lifestyle and whatever. But, you know, people could still reach out to me and ask me questions. But I saw this one meme. It was like, so what is the secret to achieving your health and fitness goals? It's like, eat less, move more, drink more water, sleep more. And then it's like, all right, keep your secrets then. Because like, nobody wants to hear that.
No,
they want like, oh, just take this pill and it works.
And that's weird, because the things you just named aren't that over the top. They take a little more work, but they're not like climb a mountain or anything like that. It's right. Literally eat a little better.
Move you don't have more. To park move further more. Away.
Simple things. Yes.
Take the stairs instead of the elevator. And it's yeah. funny because the client that I'm working with right now, he's lost what, over 10 pounds? He does not go to the gym.
Really?
Everything's been adjustment to nutrition, the quality sources of food. And I have him, he works a very, very sedentary job. He's at the computer all day, okay. all day. So I have him stretching. I'm going for walks. And it's nothing crazy. You know, I see a lot of times people are like, hit 20,000 steps. Like, what?
Yeah.
You have somebody that's not even hitting 5,000 steps on a daily basis. You want them to walk 20? Like, no, have them just, if they hit like 5,000 steps 3 times a week, have them aim for doing that 5 days a week. And then increase over time. Goals. Once it becomes normal for them, then you continue moving the bar and you do these slow things. And that's one thing that I talk about when I hop on a phone consultation. I give realistic expectations. I'm like, based on everything you told me, this is probably how I would structure your program. And don't expect to see change. Because a lot of people are like, oh, well, the first month's over. What's next? I'm like, no, you're going to keep doing the same shit.
What's next?
Like, you haven't even hit this nail on the head yet. Like, you're just
entertained and confused. Confuse the muscle.
Well, the thing is, too, is also, I think finances come into play, too. They're like, oh, well, I'm paying you. I'm just going to be upfront because it's still less than what people normally charge for 3 months of one-on-one coaching. But for 3 months, if you pay upfront with my 10% discount, $1,200.
That's
$400 a month.
That's not crazy.
Much less than the industry standard.
Especially for one-on-one deep, like, where quality.
Like, exactly.
If you had like 200 clients for that, people do that for the same price for two, and they have a 200 clients.
And they only talk to them once a week.
And it's like cookie cutter.
If even that much. And it's very cookie cutter. And it's a copy and paste.
Yeah, you're very a reasonable price.
I think I'm more than reasonable. So like, you have daily access to me. You can text me anytime. I'm always mm-hmm. I have a 24-hour policy. I may not be able to respond right away, even though I usually do. But I will respond in the next 24 hours. And then we check in with each other every week. I make sure like, hey, how are you feeling with this? Are you noticing any improvements in this? And then depending, because I do hybrid coaching. So in person, online, or both. And a lot of times, like I'll, you know, if the schedules align, we meet up in person. We track things that are like measurements. Did their flexibility improve? Did their stability improve? Can they balance on one foot for 30 seconds when they couldn't even do it for 10 when we first met? You know, so these are how we track their progress. And I think people, when they're paying, because $1,200 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, it may not be for some people, but I think for your average person that works hard and, you know, they work a day to day, and it's a lot of money to dish out.
About a third of their month's paycheck, give or take.
Correct. So. It might be an entire paycheck for some people. And it's like, so I think the mindset is, oh, I just gave them all this money. How come the program's staying the same for 3 months? Like, what am I paying for? No, I laid it all up front before you even paid me. So if you're not okay with it, I'm giving you the option to say like, no, I want someone that's going to do, I'm not that person.
They think they're paying for your program and not you. That's what I think. Because I say the same thing when I work with people, whether it's here or on site somewhere at an organization, is you're not paying for, anyone can give you a sets and reps or a video consult, whatever.
Yeah.
But you're getting my expertise. Like there's a, I don't know what it is, not a fable, but it's like it was a boat builder. And I guess they needed help building the boat and they couldn't figure out what to do. So they hired this guy, I think, for like $30,000. He comes up, he takes a hammer and just nails in one little piece. And they're like, that's all you did? It's like, you didn't pay me for the 2 seconds of nailing that piece. You paid me because I knew what to do and you didn't.
Yeah.
That comes from your expertise. And I don't think enough people in any industry, whether it's consulting with fitness, mental health, architecture, whatever, you're not paying for the hour or the program. You're paying for what you can do that using your client, you use different things like the balance and all that. He or she never would have thought of that, probably, but you did.
A lot of people, they think, you know, a fitness trainer, like, oh, we're going to get in the gym. And that was one of the questions this particular client was like, oh, so I haven't been in the gym in like, you know, over a decade. What are the workouts? I'm like, right now you're telling me you pulled a muscle trying to swing your leg over a bike seat. We're not doing that right now. Like, we're going to work on your mobility and just getting you moving more and, you know, teaching you, because really, yes, when it comes to physical fitness, movement and all that obviously is a huge factor. especially if your goal is aesthetics and to build muscle, obviously getting in the gym, doing some resistance training is going to be important. But right now, when you're feeling poor, you're stressed out all the time, you're not sleeping well, no, we're going to work on like fixing your eating habits and just moving and becoming more mobile and getting your flexibility back. And, you know, like this anymore. Now you're going to sit up like this without even trying, without thinking about it. You're going to sit up taller because we're actually working on that kind of stuff. So little baby steps. And really, in the grand scheme of things, how quickly did the month of May go by? I don't even remember it starting. Yeah, now we're in June.
Fast.
So
the year, it's already halfway through.
Exactly. So really 3 months, that's an appropriate time to do the same thing repeatedly to the point that in 90 days, those changes that you made that were very different in the beginning, by day 90, I'm hoping some of them are now just going to be second nature. You're not even thinking about it anymore. And then once we get that, then we can introduce new stuff. Because we don't want to overwhelm somebody either. Because a lot of times people are like, you need to do this. You got to track your steps, your macros. You got to do this workout. You have to eat this way. You have to go to sleep at this time. You have to drink this much water. You have to do this.
It's too much.
Avoid saturated fats. You know, and it's like, oh my God, what? And then people get discouraged and like, fuck it, I'm going back to what I know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. They get overwhelmed and if I get into the brain science of it, people always talk about dopamine and reward. Your brain likes to have peaks and valleys of what are we trying to do? Do we get it? Do we fall a little short? But when you get, using your example, if you give them all that, the peak is up here and the effort's down here, then your brain gets reinforced that, hey, that's too much. And then that's when they fall off because they're like, this is not achievable. So you're physiologically training your brain to not accomplish the goal because it's too high. But correct me if
I'm wrong, your brain's natural response is to reject anything different and only revert to what it knows.
Yeah, balance, homeostasis. And the further away it is, the harder it is. That's why starting with those increments of just walk more. Just forget steps. Just walk more.
Yeah.
If you use it, like say, take the elevator, take the stairs, that alone is more than what you did before. And people get the big eyes and they're like, I want day one. Like you said, you keep it real. And I like that because I was the same way when I was more in the fitness world. And it's like, I would lose potential clients. You probably had this happen when I told them it ain't going to be 2 months to get your dream body. 2 months is maybe we can get you in the habit of getting there. But I would say 6 months to a year, just like you. Like, and they don't like hearing that. I've seen people post.
And that's even 6 months to a year, that's a short amount of time.
That's for someone who's at the near cusp of their goal. Like say they've been consistent, they just need you to get there. But if you're like the person you're talking about 10 years, we shouldn't even be talking about dream body. Cause I've heard this too many times. I need to be like this and show a picture.
Yeah.
Like that was 15 years ago. Your age alone makes it harder to be there. Let's be realistic. You're never going to be that. I
disagree with that.
Well, I'm talking about like verbatim that they can get in good shape far as their body weight, their composition, but what I meant when they're never going to be that, they want to be the carbon copy of exactly what they were in 12th grade or something. It's like, that's fine to have aspirations to get to that performance or abilities. I'm not mad at that. But when you say, I want to be that, that's what I meant.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be.
You can't even be who
I want to be this.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I meant. I'm not saying you can never. Trust me, I'm a big believer. Like, obviously, you can get there because giving back it beside of my journey, like, I'm 219 right now. When you met me, I would say I was like 228, but if you met me a year ago, I was 238, and I've been, as an athlete, 175, 190, playing football, running track, and all those bodies look different, and it's like, you not like I say, you can get back to it, but if I get, say, back to 200 even, I won't probably look exactly how I was 200.
Well, body composition is so different too.
Exactly.
I went from 165 all the way down to like very unhealthy 113 at almost 5'6". I don't think you should ever be 113 unless you're like doing, you know, bodybuilding competitions and you have no body fat percentage.
Or you're just super short, like 5 even.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying at my height, almost 5'6", I personally don't think 113
that's lower than you should.
And but on that way down from 165 to 113, at 140, I looked much different from when I went from 113 and then trying to develop healthier habits and working out and doing resistance training. And I climbed back up to 150, that 140 coming down, 140 going back up, I looked completely different. My measurements were completely different. The 140 coming down was sloppy, you know, loose skin, like a lot of body fat. 140 coming back up, very lean.
Built that muscle.
And now I fluctuate between 125, 130, and I'm in the best shape of my life. So I don't always focus. That's when people are like, I want to lose X amount. I'm like, okay, having, for somebody who's very deconditioned and sedentary, whatever, like, okay, having a body weight goal is kind of important. But once you hit somebody that kind of has been doing this for a little bit and know like basics, you know, of the ins and outs, don't focus on the scale. Mm-hmm. Focus on how you look, how you feel. Even with my current client who, you know, he's a very deconditioned individual, I'm asking him, I'm like, now that you've, because he was losing weight, continuing to eat wings and pizza and all that. Now, recently, in the last 2 weeks, he's been choosing better quality sources of protein instead of like deep fried chicken wings. He's eating grilled chicken breasts. I'm like, how are you feeling? It's like, good. Feeling more energy, a little bit. And I did a post on this the other day where I was showing his stress level, because that's something that we track, because he has a lot with the things going on in his life. Stress was a big factor for him. So I was like, that's something we definitely want to monitor, because those heightened levels of cortisol and adrenaline and estrogen, they're going to affect your physical progress also. So we want to monitor your stress levels. He was starting when he was still continuing to lose weight. So the scale was moving in the right direction that he wanted it to, but the quality of food that he was consuming reflected in his stress levels. His stress was anywhere. I use a scale from 1 to 5, 5 being debilitating, 1 being stress-free. 3 is kind of like that. We want to look at this. Mm-hmm. And then 3, 4, and 5. I want you under 3. I want you 1 or 2. Okay. He was constantly at a 3 to 5. In the last 2 weeks where he's been choosing better quality sources of food, I've noticed his sleep has improved. And then his stress levels have been consistently 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. And that's not, he's not doing anything different other than just changing what he's consuming.
I think I saw that post. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I agree with that. It definitely goes hand in hand. What you do, it's going to reflect how you feel, and vice versa. What you feel is going to affect what you do. So
not even that, even when it comes to the quality of food sources, you take an overly processed food, there's all this extra shit in it, additives, preservatives, like anything that isn't coming from nature. And it's just, it does things to your hormones. And like I said, everything is connected to one another. So it truly does create this domino effect, right? There's a lot of, in people that consume highly processed foods, there's a lot of inflammation.
Oh yeah.
A lot of inflammation, a lot of digestive issues. And then, you know, your hormones are all out of whack. And then, so then your sleep is out of whack. And then people do things to try and fix stuff, right? Oh, I'm tired, so I'm just going to pump all this caffeine into my body.
That has an effect. Your body is very good at trying to regulate. So when you, like you said, you do all these different things, it's always trying to find that next way to regulate. And then it's a domino effect. Like you said, it just keeps going until, before you know it, after 20 years, your body doesn't know where to be. And that's why, it's not saying it's an excuse. Obviously, you can always overcome it, but it's just a harder battle now, because you had 15, 20 years of that, and they come to you and say, I need this fixed next month. So it's just all trickles down, versus like you said, let's start with the small behaviors,
yes,
which will add into the performance, which will add into what you can do, and what you can do add into how you look. But they want it A to B. But anyway, so with that being said, before we wrap it up, I always ask the guests to do something we call the take home two, meaning two pieces of, whether it's information, advice, something that once you say it, they'll be like, oh, that resonated with me, and they can go out and do, or just take home. So something, two things you can think about for a second, or you got something ready to go. So take home two different things that could be words of wisdom, could be a anecdote, could be a phrase, doesn't matter, to give the audience.
One, and this might be my first responder role, because hey, we see this all the time, and even in the health and fitness industry too. Pre-workout, caffeine overload. Really try to limit your caffeine intake. I did a whole episode on this, health for first responders. I go deep into caffeine, the half-life of caffeine, and how, like, so half-life is just how long something stays in your system. So I went in depth into the insane amount of caffeine I was taking in when I worked patrol on night shift. And I never even realized how much caffeine I was consuming until I did that episode. And I was like doing the calculations. I was like, holy fuck. fuck. Mm. I was drinking like 750 to 800 milligrams of caffeine a day.
Wow. It's like quadruple.
Right now, I try not to exceed 200. Mm-hmm. 250, 3 is really pushing it. And that is, I will not have caffeine past 1 p.m. That's where I, yeah. If it's after 1, I just deal with it.
It's going to affect you later.
Yes, absolutely. Because it directly affects your sleep structure. So even if you feel well rested, you may not actually be resting well. Mm-hmm. Your HRV, your heart rate variability.
We talked about that a few times.
We went into that.
That could be a whole different episode.
but then also, you know, like my fitness tracker will show me like my REM, my deep sleep. It's terrible. Alcohol too. And then my second piece of advice is just focus as best as you can on the things going right in your life, as opposed to the things going wrong in your life. Because even just making a slight adjustment to your perspective on things will, I'm telling you, everything is related. It's the domino effect. So even thinking more in a more positive manner. And that's not to say that like we go through shit and we can feel, you know, be in our feelings and be like, oh fuck, this really fucking sucks. Like, this is so bad. Why does this happen to me? But like to stay there, mm-hmm. horrible. If you now shift like, okay, this really fucking sucks. I wish this didn't happen, but I am grateful that X, Y, and Z is still around, or that I'm able to fill in the blank here. That small mindset shift will make all the difference in so many other areas of your life that you wouldn't even anticipate it to affect. And I only say that because I went through it those few years ago when I was going through my shit, and I was just in this constant hole of like, oh my God, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? Oh my God. And it really, you just start focusing on all of the other negative things in your life, and it just puts you in a really fucked up place, and it affects everything. You know, I put on 15 pounds without even trying, you know, mm-hmm. just simply up. Because I had that negative mindset. And now when I'm going through, you know, like this year has been a whirlwind of things. And I would say like on paper, the things I've gone through this year have been bad. But my shift, my perspective on it has not been there. It's been like, oh, this kind of fucking sucks. But hey, yeah. At least X, Y, and Z, at least I get to do this. At least this is here. At least, you know, whatever. And I truly, like, I've been able to maintain that happiness and just focusing on the things that bring me joy in my life. And I feel like it's, like, improved my quality of sleep, my physical, like, my aesthetics. Like, I'm making so much progress in the gym with just even, you know, I don't know. Everything's related. When you're happy, you're more motivated to do things. Yeah. You're more consistent. You enjoy doing the things that you do that bring you that happiness. It's just, it's a cycle.
Yeah. And that's 100% true, because it takes energy mentally and physically to be in that negative or depressed or whatever state. And like I said, it's not feeling it. It's about, like I said, staying there. There's even theories in evolutionary psychology where they say depression was once like almost like a defense mechanism to say, we need to reflect on what's going wrong to problem solve. Because back then, I always say there's no more saber-toothed tigers. It's like, we need to solve this, because if we don't, we're stuck in a situation where we could die.
Right.
Now we don't really have that. So when people get depressed, it's okay to stay there in their eyes because they got all their needs met. So like you said, you got to get out of there, figure out what's going right, because while it's not going to be an end-all be-all, the problem's still there. It's just that, but now I can put this energy on what can progress me or be more productive. And you did that. So 100%. So I guess even though you discontinued your podcast, there's still a few episodes. How many episodes did you do?
I think there's 19.
So 19. So you can plug that, where to find it, what's it called, and any other things you want to.
The Rugged Resilience Podcast. If you go to my website, ruggedresiliencellc.com, you'll be able to just click on the website. You'll get to my Instagram. You'll get to the podcast. And there's like a few extra stuff that I won't get into, but everything's there. You can listen. I don't plan on deleting anything. So at least the content I've created is still out there. Whoever ears it reaches, you know, hopefully it helps them or encourages them or does something positive, but I'm going to keep it there. And then, like I said, this is just, it's indefinite. I might come out with another episode, but it right now trying to record weekly episodes is no longer bringing me joy.
Hey, I get it. Trust me. It takes a lot of effort.
A lot of work.
Self-producing and all that stuff. So I understand 100%. So yeah, so I appreciate you coming through. This was a long anticipated. I think it's going to be a good one. A lot of great information. So as always, guys, thanks for tuning in and get your mind right.